Very excited this evening to once again be talking with Alex Newell, the author of the amazing book Coevolution, that spoke about his abduction back in the late 80s, and very unique story, this one. And so welcome all the way from New Zealand, Alex Newell.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to speak to you again after a year or so. And as you commented, it's a shame it can't be in person.
Yeah.
But we'll do it by phone if we have to do it anyway at all. At least at least I can talk to you this way, and nobody can get between us. It seems to be somebody's predominant sort of wish that I don't talk to too many Australians. So we'll get back, I suppose, to the original Coevolution story, if you like.
Yes, please. Just briefly to bring people up to speed, and then we'll go to where it's gone to, which is very exciting.
Yeah, well, none of this is new, but the way that it was relayed to me, it was difficult for me to put it in perspective, and I've kept stuff that I wasn't too sure about until I saw developments happening in the real world, which made sense of it. So What will be following after our little prelim is basically what I've been sitting on for 20, 25 years, and it's almost like it was sci-fi back then, but now when I analyse it, it's not so sci-fi at all. In fact, it's right in your face.
Sci-fact now.
Yeah, the sci-fact is right, and it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So there's two sides to every story, of course, and fortunately, events that have happened in the last 5 or 6 years, referring to another person involved here, has sort of relayed information which gives me some hope for the future where it wasn't before. And I'm not one to convey bad, you know, poor black stories, so I've kept a lot of the downside of it to myself. But
great.
It all started back in 1989, driving basically from one area of New Zealand to another, where I lost 10 days of real time. And when I came back to analyse it and got some of my memories back, and I've been sort of downloading memory ever since, I guess, but it came back in stages. And once I realised that I'd lost 10 days and recovered some of that memory, I'd been off planet for that length of time, and there was no other explanation for it, because I didn't have like 10 days of fuel in the car. I didn't even have enough money to shout myself a motel for 10 days in a row. So I knew that I hadn't been sleeping in the car on the side of the road, because I hadn't been feeding myself for 10 days either. So it's pretty, you know, there's no doubt in my mind it wasn't just a mental blackout. There was 10 days of missing time.
And it was noted on your calendar as well, wasn't it?
When I first thought I had some missing time, I thought it was just 2 or 3 days. I didn't realise it was a whole week in 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
Because at that stage, I was just counting on the weekend following up from when I was driving the car. But the weekend was a whole week and a half ahead, so it worked out at 10 days.
So this
and that's like, there's no way we can do it justice in a 5 or 10 minute recount. But basically, my ancestral line, as I think a lot of humans are slowly finding out, belongs to races of beings that don't necessarily reside on planet Earth at this time and date.
Yeah.
So I found out that my relatives had come calling and plucked me off the planet for 10 days. And the convoluted story was basically they're returning at some time in the near future.
Yeah.
They need to somehow splice back into our gene pool to even survive on planet Earth. So that 10 days away was to orientate me to their needs and to basically fulfill some commitments that I'd possibly made in another lifetime. So this is sort of involving past lives and recessing ancestral bloodlines, I guess, that could be thousands or even millions of years old. So the story is quite complex, but basically the plucking me for 10 days was just a reminder of what I'm doing here and what I'd contracted to do, and did I want to fulfill that contract? Because it's still a free option, a free world, and they hold sway with the fact that nobody's forced to do anything against their will. unlike Australian immigration from yeah, Loco there. And their interaction with me was basically, did I want to fulfill this program that I had probably made with them so long ago I'd forgotten about.
And so for the listener here, for the listener though, we're not talking about human-looking people, are we? They're blue aliens, a bit like the classic alien that people would see.
Well, yes. I mean, it's amazing actually how quickly you can get used to dealing with something that's possibly not human-looking. Like if you've seen the movie Avatar and that, where, you know, the entities have got blue skin, it's not very far into the movie before you even forget they've got blue skin. You know, they're just another person that you're talking to. And they don't have to look totally human, but they've still got arms and legs and a head and a body. So their basic layout is still human to look at.
Bipedal life form.
Yeah, well, I mean, and there was a hybrid group of people from the original aliens, which, because, as I said, they're trying to splice themselves back into the human gene pool, and a hybrid race are very human-looking. And the blue skin was, in actual fact, only a bodysuit. It was only a skin-type covering that they used as part of their technology. So when you consider that they've got blue skin, it was removable and with a sort of like a chemical wash, if you like. So underneath that blue skin, they have white skin like we do. And even though I've tried to make that point several times in my other storytelling, it seems to get overlooked for some reason, and everyone just keeps going back to these people who got blue skin. But it's an artificial blue skin, and it just relates to the technology they're using. So,
as
far as that goes, I wasn't considering them having a blue skin because I had the same blue suit on. When I looked down, I was blue as well.
Right.
But I knew it could be removed.
So the significance for people really is that these guys had a base actually here on planet Earth, and that was messed up with in the early 80s, wasn't it? So maybe we can bring the story forward to that bit.
Yes, it's all part of their storyline is that they had a base at a place called Thule Island, which is just south of the Falklands. And, of course, that was mixed up in the Falklands War in 1982 when the British came down there to sort the Argentinians out that considered they owned the Falklands archipelago and the South Sandwich Islands below it, which Thule Island is part of that archipelago. And when the British went down and beat up on the main island, the main Falklands Island, and then moved on down to the extreme fringes of it, which concluded this Thule Island, which had an Argentinian scientific base on it, and below it, it had a long-used alien base that was housed, basically housing these, what we call the blue ETs, for want of a better name.
Yeah.
And they were doing research down there on some ancient bioweapons which had been left on planet Earth for a longer time than I can even imagine, part of ancient wars, which anyone over was the Earth history in an expanded version, not the Wikipedia version.
No.
not the Wiki's version anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There had been alien wars on this planet for eons.
Yeah.
Evidently, there's different races of aliens that had basically made this place their base, and each race seemed to think that they had priority over others, and there'd been sort of genetic wars around planet Earth for millions of years.
And
they got shuffled. Everyone got shuffled off here at some stage by Big Brother, by some other alien contingency that did have the power to remove them,
mm-hmm.
so that the human race could get on with their own lifestyle, I believe, or our own adventures, our own expansion.
Yeah.
And so what the people that were sent in after that sort of revival of the human race, we'd been sort of like slave labor up till that point. Once we were set free and to run our own direction, there were what we call subcontractors sent into planet Earth to clean up what was left of these ancient wars, ancient bio wars, whatever you like to call them.
Yeah.
And one of the caches of this more potent, I guess, you could call it a weapon. It's an AI construct anyway, artificial intelligent bioweapon.
Yeah.
Some sort of a, I wouldn't even like to describe it. Really, this, it's difficult to describe because nobody here has actually given it a name in reality. We've only been sort of playing around with it as far as trying to understand the concept of it.
Yeah.
And just ad-libbing off the top of my head, it's impossible for me to even describe it to someone. It's beyond my pay grade in technical terms. But this, there were evidently a large storage facilities of this stuff in the region of Thule Island, which is interesting because that's actually and only an outreach of Antarctica. And I believe that when these wars were actually taking place, Antarctica wasn't covered in ice at that stage.
Yep.
So we're talking about a landmass probably central to the world, which Antarctica is. It's in the center of the world's oceans, which Plato, I think, described Atlantis at one stage, because the world doesn't have separate oceans. They're all joined, of course. The Atlantic and the Pacific all run together. The Indian Ocean is all part of the world ocean.
Yeah.
And right in the center of all that, we have this place called Antarctica.
Yeah.
So if there were ancient civilizations anywhere that were central on the planet, then maybe Antarctica is part of it.
Yeah.
Maybe some of these wars the aliens were having were predominantly around this area. But most certainly, the Blue ET race was sent in to deprogram one of the major biological warfare weapons, which was left under the base of Thule Island. So that's what they were doing there initially.
Yeah. And we affectionately call this black goo, don't we? And it's even managed to make its way into popular culture in the movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, the X-Files for years ran an alien virus, which was described or shown to be some sort of a black fluidic sort of material, which could get into the human genome system and change humans into basically, well, zombies, you would think. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of the Hollywood zombie movies come from as well, because AI, artificial intelligence, if it's an electrical construct, which it could be, would have the ability maybe to reanimate dead objects or even non-biological objects.
Yeah.
Which is the sort of the hint that I got from the little I do know about it.
Yeah.
It most certainly seems to have the ability to reanimate basically non-living entities. So you could call it a zombie activator.
Wow.
That would be probably the best thing you could call it, because it can do other things as well. I mean, it can defy gravity, it can alter gravity, it can alter the gravity of planet Earth. And I've seen some gravity anomaly maps, which are concentrated in and around that area of Thule Island, and they certainly show some very strange anomalies coming out of that area. So
I think we can assume as well that it can take over our human consciousness, and maybe it already has taken over tens of thousands of people in significant positions. Is that a possibility?
Well, that's the rumours I've heard, and it fits with what I've seen and experienced myself. When I'd had those 10 days missing time, some government agencies found out about it, and we won't go into the hows and whys of that because of time constraints.
Yeah.
But certainly I had some agencies knock on my door, and by refusing to cooperate with them, I found myself locked up for more than 10 days, for 6 months, in fact, in a state-run penitentiary or a correction facility, they call it.
Yeah.
It was a sort of a low-profile place, but I was certainly locked away from my family and from the general public for 6 months.
Yep.
And during that time, I was visited by some pretty strange government agents, which never really identified themselves to who they were or who they worked for. They were in the position of knowing everything about me, but I wasn't put in a like position to know anything about them.
One of these guys you called House, and this is, we just might as well rocket the story along. That was just fascinating when I read some details about him.
Yes, he was one of the guys sent to interrogate me. He actually came from one of the South African intelligence agencies, and this guy was literally as big as a house. I mean, he was pretty close to 7 foot tall and really solidly built. And you know, this first time I saw him, I just thought, I thought brick house, you know, as yeah. you do.
Yeah.
And that nickname stuck.
Yeah.
But he was a pretty strange character. I mean, I described him as almost albino because he had very translucent skin, very silvery white hair, and eyes that could, you know, just pierce right through you. And he wasn't stupid. He was he had a lot of, well, from what I gather, scientific degrees. Worked for various scientific organisations, I found out later on.
Personal.
But most certain.
Personally, telepathic ability and stuff too, didn't he?
Certainly. He was an intelligence gathering agent. He was sent to interpret me.
Yeah.
Interrogate me, sorry, but
maybe both.
Probably interpret me. As
probably
well.
Both, and but also he certainly sounded down.
Yeah, I'm trying to bulldoze through this as
yeah,
you suggest, but it's
yeah.
probably a lolly scramble for somebody trying to follow the storyline. But just so we can cut to the chase and get to the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
This guy sort of won me over in a way because we started discussing aspects of mutual enemies, and we're talking about mutual enemies of either planet Earth or the human race. And even though we might have been on opposing sides at a level which would be terrestrial or human, but you know, when you're faced perhaps with a common enemy or a common weapon that could be used against humanity, you suddenly see the bigger picture's more important. And so he won me over on logic in a way, even though I never really cooperated at an interrogation level with giving out information. But he decided that he would share a lot of stuff with me that I wouldn't have been privy to, I think, if we hadn't had an earnest 2 days of discussion to back it up.
Sounds fantastic. And, lucky you,
yeah,
eh?
So, yeah, well, to prove a point, I think he was testing me out to start with, Paul.
Yeah.
He wanted to know if I was legit in more ways than one.
Yeah.
And one of the very first tests was some sort of really unbelievable equipment that he had there. He sort of transposed us in some way to another time and place. It was like he had some holographic device or some time displacement device. I mean, who knows what these agencies have got at their disposal? I mean, we never see the tips of the iceberg of what you hear about with military sort of applications. But
this is some form of TARDIS then, because he and you just nicked off to some other place in time. I mean, how's that for the listeners? That's pretty cool,
isn't
it?
That's all I can describe it, Paul. I mean, it was way above my pay grade to try and work it out.
Yeah.
But he could flick a switch and he could seem to send us in physical reality to another place. Like we were in a room. We were in an interrogation room 1 minute.
Yeah.
He flicks the switch on this device, and the next minute we're out in the open air.
Wow.
And, I mean, this first visit I had, he took me somewhere high up in some mountain range, because in the background I could see mountains with snow on, and we were standing in an open field.
Yep.
And it appeared to me as if it had been a ploughed field, because there were sort of ruts or furrows as far as I could see straight ahead of us, and we were walking in this ploughed field. Now, how you do that in a holographic projection, I don't know.
Yep.
But I'm looking around me at these mountains, and there's a cliff face quite close to us in the direct line of this furrowed field. And we're walking towards this hole in this cliff face.
Mm.
And he said, I want to show you something, and I want to get your reaction to it, basically.
Mm.
And he takes me into this cliff face with a gash or a slash in it.
Yep.
And when I walk in, it's like a cave, but it's got a shape, a definite shape to it. And the walls inside this cave are absolutely glass smooth, like they've been melted.
Yep.
And we get in about 50 or 100 yards or so, and there's a UFO, or what I could describe as a UFO, jammed in this slot, and you could see from the outline of the UFO, it was responsible for this grooved wall within this cliff base.
Yep.
And the next minute, he says, "I want you to think about what you're seeing here, and I want you to describe what you find, and I'm going to take you inside." And the next minute, we're inside this UFO.
Wow.
And he's saying, "What is your take on this?" And this was, putting it back in context, this was a test. I didn't know it at the time.
Yep.
This was a test to my previous experience with extraterrestrials.
Yep.
And when I looked around inside this UFO, the first thing I could say, well, it's not really a cosmic vehicle, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Meaning that to me, it looked very primitive.
Yep.
It looked metallic. It looked almost man-made. And
yep.
I basically said to him, "This is not an ET construct, is it?"
Mm.
And he laughed his head off. He just roared with laughter.
Wow.
And that's when he said, "This is the test, and you've just passed it."
Uh-huh.
And the next minute, we're back in the interrogation room again.
So you'd spotted the Datsun in the room.
The analysis of that was, I guess, a man-made UFO that had malfunctioned at some stage.
Yep.
Got itself, the ploughed field was obviously, it was sliding along this ploughed field.
Yep.
And it's whatever its motive device was, it had melted the rock face to a certain degree before it had stopped, before it had malfunctioned completely.
Might have been its force field, actually, but keep going, yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and I know that UFOs can quite possibly move through mountains or through solid objects when they're in their fully functional state.
Yeah.
But even though this might have been a man-made device, it was obviously capable of that, but it had malfunctioned.
Yeah.
And it only got halfway through that mountain before it broke down. But he wasn't going to show me anything exceptionally, you might say, being inside a man-made UFO is an exceptional experience. But when you've been inside an ET UFO, you realize how primitive some of our Earth technology is.
Yeah.
So he wasn't going to show me anything really far out.
Yeah.
I mean, bad enough that I'd seen his device that was projecting us to these places. And then after that, he took me to several other places. But the one important thing, the most important place he took me, which was the final destination in the series of events that was still being acted out in a penitentiary, in an interrogation room in a state prison, basically, knowing that I knew about Thule Island, knowing that I'd been interacting with these blue ETs working at Thule Island, I found this out later, of course, because he had been to Thule Island at an earlier time. He had seen the alien base there. So to him, he was okay with all that. He'd been there 10 years previously. I didn't know that, of course, but as he was downloading this information, then he took me to this base under Thule Island, using his projective devices, holographic device, or TARDIS, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
So I got to see this black goo subject in containment, obviously, but I got to see it firsthand, and I got to see what it was capable of.
Mm.
Now, this black goo subject, even though nobody really knows exactly what it's made of.
Substance, yeah.
Yep. We know that it is a nanotechnology that is infused with AI. So it has its own mind, it has its own presence, and it has its own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And being nano, it's deadly, because nano can spread throughout the planet, basically. If you give a small package of nanotechnology its head, it will just replicate itself nonstop, 24/7. And in a week, you can have a bucket full that would fill an ocean.
Wow.
So if nanotechnology that is like has a non-human programming, perhaps, or its main programming would be to, say, delete life off planet Earth, if you set a bucket load of this stuff free on planet Earth, it could do it in a month, maybe, or a year.
Wow.
There wouldn't be a living thing left on the planet.
Wow.
That's the sort of bioweapons we're talking about if you're talking about alien technology. So...
Mm-hmm.
just for people to get their head around, this stuff is not just deadly, it's ultra deadly. It makes weapons of mass destruction seem like matchsticks in comparison. So, and that's the whole entire reason why it's been buried on planet Earth. If an alien race was fighting a battle here and it was losing and it had to leave, it could quite obviously flick a switch on this stuff and set it loose on planet Earth. And unless you had an antidote or a weapon of equal status, what I was actually seeing on Thule Island or under Thule Island was this product in its raw state or censored in a way that it was in a containment vessel. And I saw it basically duplicate myself while I was standing in front of it. So it was constructing me from looking at me, and it was constructing a being that looked exactly like me. Initially, it mimicked everything I did. Like if I turned, it turned. If I spoke, it spoke.
So this is a mirroring thing we saw Groucho do in the early Marx Brothers movies. That sort of stuff,
Yeah, but that's what it started to do. But after a very short time, it broke away from that, and then it became its own entity. In other words, it no longer mimicked me. It was just standing there looking back at me, basically flaunting itself to say, I am you. And the interface was, it seemed to be able to reach into me. And it was what it was trying to do was draw my mental imagery of myself and pull it into itself. And in other words, it was trying to confuse me as to not believing I was me and that I was actually it. Now, that's pretty difficult to explain on the phone. It's pretty difficult to explain to anybody. But what it was trying to do was completely, it was trying to hypnotically suggest that I join it and become it and leave my body as it to do whatever with, to fall down and be dead, if you like. That's the impression I got. I had to use all my wherewithal, all my focus to draw myself back and to keep myself focused on my own body, looking at myself and not looking at it, or else I would have lost myself right there and then. That's a scary thought, because that wasn't even out of the box. That was what in a containment vessel. So you can imagine this stuff is so exotic, so unbelievably
seductive.
I can't even to this day find words to describe. To me, it was like frightening at the time.
So Star Trek people will remember the episode with Picard being trying to be taken over by the Borg, and this sort of thing has got a similar feel to it, except it's some total physical replication and then superhuman beyond that version of us. How scary.
A replica of ourselves, exactly so. And there's no weapon to fight that. I mean, because if you were of a weaker mind strength, or you weren't warned about this stuff, if you just came across it in the ocean or walking in the bush and there was a pool of it somewhere and you weren't focused knowing that it could do this, it would just suck you out of yourself and off you would go again. And your body would basically, well, if you wanted to destroy your body, it would then be you. So it's replicated you, and it's walking around. It could walk out of the bush and be you, and no one would know the difference.
Wow.
So how many people that has actually happened to? I mean, related to the story is what happened to the Marconi scientists back in the, straight after the Falklands War in the early 1980s. I believe this stuff was taken back to the Marconi scientists in the UK, and they started working with the stuff. And the story that's out there in the mainstream, which anyone can Google if they like, Marconi scientists, strange death, suicides in the 1980s, will find that about, I don't know, two dozen Marconi scientists working on some top secret project, and you can guess what it would have been, trying to decode this black goo, committed the most horrendous acts on themselves, committed suicide in the most horrendous ways, or were killed in some strange way, which doesn't make any sense at all, like absolutely ridiculous, almost comical suicides, comical in a gruesome sort of way.
Yeah.
You can only imagine that I am of the thinking that some certain agencies had these scientists put down because they had already been replicated, or they already were replicated, and basically maybe they caught this AI virus, and the only way to take them out of the game would be to kill them off.
Right.
They'd been contaminated in some way.
Yeah.
It makes sense when you think about it in that way, because they've been examining those Marconi scientists' deaths for 20, 30 years, and no one's come up with a logical explanation. In fact, they've shelved it and just packaged it and forgotten about it. It's just so insanely ridiculous what happened there. But not if you can consider what I've just been describing.
Yeah. So as the whole story then progresses for the listeners, now we're heading into what you were calling before plastic humans, type 3 humans, transhumanism. I mean, in the last year, I've really enjoyed the movie Ex Machina, which is about an AI, very seductive AI person being constructed with consciousness and feelings and massive hardcore in their processor, to be able to gauge and interact with humans to a degree of total seduction and manipulation. Just intensely amazing movie, that, to go and see.
The only thing is, Paul, that's still a mechanical device. I think think above that. Think six levels above that.
Yeah.
Think of a mechanical human being that's a pure human being. That's much more difficult to analyze or screen. Basically, we're an electrical processor ourselves. Our brain is a computer. We work off electrical impulses. How easy would it be for some very advanced AI construct to basically infiltrate the human body and be a human being, but be still a robot at the same time? Not have a soul, not have an afterlife, not basically have come from somewhere else, but just be a mechanical device living in a human body, but taking over the human race in that manner. I think that's what this black goo is capable of.
Without any of the limitations of moral values and standards and stuff like that.
Well, when you see how the human race is being run, I mean, the moral ethics are only for corporations to enjoy. It seems to be decent human beings don't have much of a say in the way anything's run these days, but plastic corporations do.
Yep.
And if you consider a plastic corporation as just a big computer database, which pretty much is, and the rush is to get us all into AI technology, to get us to wear bracelets now or wear chip implants, to be part of that electronic mega AI industry, and we are racing for it. You know, like we all carry iPads around or cell phones around, which are transient AI products, basically. Microwave technology runs right through your body, right through your brain. It's basically radiating you. It will kill you if you get enough of it, and everyone knows that. And what we're all carrying around is miniature porta packs of microwave technology. I think the race for this AI product is to take over the human race by seducing us with our own technology. If you consider, like many do, that the computer chip came out of the Roswell crash, because it was certainly given to IBM, I believe, in 1947, and in late 1947, early 1948, the silicon chip became reality out of nowhere. And if you do a bit of research on the guys that were credited with discovering the silicon chip, nearly every scientist working at IBM or people that knew these guys said they were dweebs. They couldn't come up with an original idea if you hit them on the head with a hammer. Suddenly they come up with the biggest revelation in human history, which is a computer, basically.
The book, The Day After Roswell, by Colonel Philip Corso, people can read, The Day After Roswell, talks about all of the crashed UFOs that they collected, well, the main ones anyway, and the way they took the tech from the craft, handed it to Rand Corp and AT&T and these other organizations, Bell Labs, and they said, this has come from our foreign technology department. What do you think it does? Find out how it works. And then these then became lasers, masers, integrated chips, motherboards.
Superconducting computers, eventually.
All sorts of stuff, and Kevlar and all sorts of things came that way. So I'm totally up with that story, yeah.
That's right. So the twist to this, or the only combatant that I've been able to come across is in terminology for us to go basically supercomputing ourselves. There's a product called White Powder of Gold.
Yeah.
David Hudson, if anybody wants to Google David Hudson's name and White Powder of Gold,
They
will find this product is real.
Yeah.
Is as factual and as real as you are or I am.
Yeah.
And it has an ability to superconduct itself. White powder of gold is basically just crystallized gold. It's gold that its atomic structure has been pulverized and broken down to its merest single atomic piece.
Yeah.
It just crumbles into a powder when you do this. But the thing is, at room temperature, this powdered gold can superconduct.
Mm-hmm.
The secret would be, once this powdered gold is chelated into a form that can be digested by the human body,
mm-hmm.
we have an internal process that can allow this to be absorbed through our bloodstream,
yep.
and we can then basically go to a superconductive state.
Yeah,
and a superconductive state is neither negatively or positively charged. It goes to the zero point.
Beautiful.
For the Godhead.
Yep.
That would allow the human body to superconduct, which would mean we would be able to draw our energy from the cosmos. Basically, once you are superconducting or resonating at that frequency, you can live off light.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to eat real physical food.
Yeah.
And you would access basically the knowledge that's held within every atom in the cosmos. So everything that's ever happened and everything that's possibly ever going to happen and if it will happen, you can access it
mm-hmm.
once you get to a superconductive state. That would be the future of the human race if we use a chemical process to enhance humanity rather than a physical, mechanical means, which would be an AI computer strapped to your head or a chip injected into your bloodstream or into your brain.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, one would be, a natural way to progress to superconductive abilities, and the other would be a darker way, a way that could be controlled by other forces, and that would be computer chip programming, which I think was the plan to send humanity down that track. Well, I don't say it's the plan. I can see it happening right now in broad daylight.
Yeah.
Humanity is being herded into a corral which is full of AI technology, and we're being asked to swallow it, basically, physically swallow it into our system.
Yeah.
I think that's the dark road of humanity. That's the road to the Borg, if you like.
There's a lot of talk about RFID chips coming into places like the US and that from next year, that just going to be injected into somebody's back of their hand so that they can use it as a scanner and also a detector to trace where you are and all that sort of stuff as well. And what's in those things is the important thing, because it could be loaded with similar types of nanotech that you've already spoken about.
Exactly so. Well, what I'm getting at is it won't be very long before you'll need an ID chip implanted before you can even get your own money out of the bank. That's what's going to be happening.
Mm.
It'll be a cashless society. All your money will be electronic. But unless you've got a chip injected into you, you won't be able to access your money. That's the next step.
Mm.
And then, of course, you'll have to chip your children to send them to school, because they won't be allowed in school unless they're chipped. And that's just basically blackmailing people into accepting this sort of technology. It's so close now, Paul, I can smell it. It's around the corner.
Mm.
I mean, the vaccinations was just the tip of the iceberg. If you don't vaccinate your children, which is basically injecting them with nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't vaccinate your children, they can't go to school. You can't get your dues from your tax paid dues from the from the government for child support.
Yep.
All of this thing, you're being blackmailed out of by not conforming to nano computerized technology. So that's the way we're being herded. I can't see any way to stop it just from where I stand, because if the government says you get a chip and the bank says you get to inject the chip to get your money out of the bank, which is your own money, but that's beside the point, they'll just say, well, what's the harm? And people will fall for that by the dozens, by the thousands, by the millions. They'll just fall for it because, oh, a cashless society must be a safer place.
Yeah.
There can't be any thieves to rip us off.
Yeah, they'll back it up with some security reason to do that
to save
yourself. Now, you mentioned a while ago hope for the future. Have you got some?
Well, the only hope that I have is that this white powder of gold substance, this crystallized gold, becomes our elixir. This is what you buy at the supermarket. This is what will enhance you to not need to be chipped, because you won't need to be educated in a way. Your children can learn everything from the cosmos instantly, like a lot of extraterrestrial races have already done, I think. From a spiritual standpoint, they don't go to school and they don't learn things like we do. They are born knowing this stuff because they're already been infused with this, what you could only call spiritual technology, I think, is probably one of the best ways to describe it.
So
it's the future of the human race if you go the way of the light. That's all I can say, Paul.
It would be really difficult to imagine that the bigger picture is going to allow people that aren't chipped in their gated communities and in their gated towns and that. So it might require isolated communities, which would then be seen to be rebels and whatever else, I would imagine. So it's a bit interesting in terms of what potentials could come of this.
Yeah, well, I do see some sort of a... I hope it doesn't come to a war, but, I mean, already there will be isolated people in the community that don't want to vaccinate their children, that don't want to chip themselves. I mean, there's going to be a natural resistance to that. Whether they're all herded up and locked up, or...
Yeah.
As you say, in a gated community somewhere, not allowed to interact with the main, because 90% of the population will go the way, the easy way. They won't fight for their rights. They may think there is no other choice. So part of my protocol, if you like, part of my inheritance is to basically break this technology out, to start talking about it now, because this wasn't possible 20 years ago, Paul. Even the chipping of people and compulsory vaccinations wasn't on the agenda 20 years ago, and I'm talking my experience 25 years ago now. I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't even see the reality anywhere around me. I thought, I'm imagining this, or what I've been told is this pie in the sky. Now, all of a sudden, it's the 11th hour. I can see this stuff happening tomorrow. So I'm not the only one that knows this, and I'm just hoping that other people come out. Because unless the stuff, this alternate technology is talked about, the ways of light rather than dark, I mean, unless people know there's an option, unless they know where to go or that they know where to seek this information, they have nothing to ask for. If you don't ask for, if you don't know something exists, you can't ask for it.
I think at this point we should be giving people directions to your website and to also other sites that may be of value and help. So especially seeing you've got Coevolution, your original book, the third, whatever we're going to call that, the third upgrade of that coming out soon.
Yes, well, I've got a Facebook page, Paul, in my own name, Alec Newell.
So
but also Newald.
Newald.
That's it. And also in the name of the book Coevolution, I've got a public page there for that.
Yeah.
And that's where I'll be downloading probably most of the more pertinent information relating to this. The David Hudson material on white powder gold, where I think AI technology is going to take us. I haven't broken all that out yet, because we are writing the third edition of Coevolution through Nexus Magazine and Duncan Rhodes. That will be published later on this year. But they can find all that information when it becomes available on my Facebook site.
And you should
under Coevolution.
And you've also got Coev, haven't you? The your website,
or is yes, that... they can search that Coev. Gosh, I don't even remember the exact
terminology. Coev.nz, I think it is, isn't it?
It's web something or other. Look, I haven't used it for so long, Paul. I don't think we'll even bother with that at the moment.
So
if they find me on Facebook, that'll be a lead up and they can trace me from there.
Okay, cool.
Or if they just Google my name or Coevolution and my name, they'll get a 40,000 hits probably.
And more than they bargained for.
They'll find me from there.
They'll get more than they bargained for is what they'll get.
That's what they'll get. But anyway, I just thank you, Paul, for the opportunity to get this stuff out. To start in unwrapping the package, if you like.
Sure.
Well, long way to go.
Blurred Truth's always interested in updates like this, and maybe we'll be getting back to get the latest next instalments from you sometime soon. But thank you so much for your time tonight, Alex Newell.
I really appreciate the opportunity, Paul. Thanks for just giving me this time to download some stuff on you and your listeners. Thank you.